This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we're live here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram. Here for you, here for your pets. Anything you want to talk about, now is the time. It's very easy. Just join in the conversation. You can reach me here. If you're here on Pet Life Radio, then you're here already. So I don't need to give you a phone number. But Instagram, just ask away. I've already gotten some questions. And one from a friend of mine who we met on a vacation and has become a regular. Love to see it. Cabo is great. We were at Secrets Cabo. It was terrific. It really was. Love it. And this is where we're going to head to Antarctica with the fam in 4 weeks. So looking forward to that. It's good to go. The only problem with me getting away, you know, it's funny. I hear this all the time. People say, oh my God, you're getting away. That's great. That's great. What they don't understand is that when I get back, I'm seeing the same amount of people that I would normally see in a week, but I'm compressing it into 3 days instead of 5 days. And it's crazy. One day last week, I saw 46 patients in a day. I mean, worked my behind off. And I mean, look, it was great. Everybody got seen. I got home late, but I don't really care. I don't look at a clock. And for me, it's providing the service. And, you know, I always say, yeah, let me just put it this way so you can understand. And this was done by the American Vet Med Association study. From my era, the average veterinarian worked 60 hours a week. And it's gotten down a little bit. Now for a full-time veterinarian, seasoned veterinarian, it's 48 hours a week. The new graduates are coming out of school and 27 and a half hours a week. So nobody wants to work full time. They want to, you know, it's like work-life balance. And that's okay. But the reason people are always saying, how come I can't see your bed? How come they're always saying, well, I can see you in 3 weeks? Because they're not working. So even though there are more graduates, more men and women graduating from veterinary school, because of the change in work-life balance, no one's working. All the new people aren't really working super full-time. They want to have their time for families. They want to have time for whatever. And that's okay. But the vet schools then have to understand that. And the associations have to understand that and either enlarge their classes because they have to know that instead of 40 hours a week, the average work week is 27 and a half hours a week. So it's kind of frustrating. I love it because I'm seeing a lot more pet clients. I went into this business for that very reason. So I could see a lot of patients. I love it. And I say, joke, it's my golf. My clients tell me all the time, you're not going to retire, are you? And I said, no, because if you retire, we're going to kill you. So it's the same way I feel. I'm either that or I'm going to die of boredom because I was lucky that this is my vocation and my avocation. It's my job and it's my hobby. So it works out really well. So let's get some questions. I have some things I want to talk about, but of course, I want to hear from you and see what you want to hear. Because if you don't want to hear it, then I'm not going to talk about it. So got a lot of waves, but I want some questions. So in the meantime, let me start, I guess, talking about one of the things I wanted to talk about, because I'm fortunate enough to be in a profession where my sort of philosophy has always been being available. And I think if you ask any veterinarian, do you think that your patients and clients should have access to care 24/7? Of course, the answer is yes. They all say yes. So then when I say, oh, so you're okay with working 24/7? Oh, no, I'm not going to do it 24/7. So I said, well, what do you do when you're not available? No, we have a recording, we send them to emergency. What I want to talk about is through my experience as a concierge doctor, where my clients do have my cell phone. They can call me anytime. They usually don't abuse it. In fact, I just had a conversation with a very good friend of mine, very, very famous, popular veterinarian also, has written books. His name is Dr. Marty Becker. He was on Good Morning America for years as their in-house veterinarian and just a great guy. He's my era. We both are the same age. It's a different philosophy. We know that concierge is really the way to go. Clients really love it. But we also have learned this, and it's been basically confirmed by AirVet, our telemedicine platform, and that is most emergencies are not. And if you had someone to talk to, and now with telemedicine, actually see the patient, not just hear it, not hear a description from a client, but actually between FaceTime and telemedicine, we can actually see the patient. I would say of the calls that I've gotten, the virtual visits on AirVet, I would say probably 95% were not emergencies. We used to say 80-20. 80 were not, 20 were. If you ask a general veterinarian who, you know, sends clients to emergency and say, well, how many of those were really emergency? He'd probably say 20%. I'm telling you, it's 5%. So what I want to talk about is, and we'll do it. I'm going to have a question here that I'm going to answer. But there are so many things you can do and so many things that you worry about, but you really don't need to. At least not say ignore, but you don't have to worry about it, that you have to go to emergency clinic tonight or on the weekend, spend thousands of dollars, have young doctors who are really covering those times and nobody else wants to cover. The seasoned vets, they want to have a weekend. So who does it go to? It goes to the new graduates. And they really have no idea. They're worried about missing something. So they're going to test for everything. And I mean everything. So I look at reports from emergency, I go, what test that for? It has nothing to do with why you're going. It drives me nuts. And you guys are paying for it. So anyway, wondering if dogs could get depressed. My daughter leaves on business and my dog has to. Absolutely. They do get depressed. We see it. I mean, I saw it when we had to put one of our dogs to sleep. And this is a dog. They were literally, it was my two black labs. It was my original black lab that I got when I went to Berkeley. And that was Thor. And then when I went to vet school, we obviously, Thor came with us. And we got another dog named Woodrow, Woody. And when Thor passed away, Woody was so depressed. He would, well, for one thing, and this is what just got us. They each had their own bed. All right, in the living room, big, big cushiony bed. And Thor had his, Woody had his, and they would never, you would never see Woody going onto Thor's bed and vice versa. So when Thor passed away, it was just during the summer before my second year, we drive back up to Davis and Woody runs out of the car. You know, I would take one, my wife would take the other one. So they would, you know, they, for the 5 hour to 6 hour drive, they wouldn't see each other and they would see each other and they would go like nuts. It was so cute. So what happened was, Woody, and this is what got us, went to Thor's bed, started sniffing it, lied down on it, and started whimpering. Now, I ask you, do they recognize? Absolutely. And so when someone in the house, now, if there are others in the house that can do it, then, you know, sort of give that love, give that attention, then they're going to be fine. But unfortunately, if there's only one person and that pet bonded with your daughter, and all of a sudden, the daughter's gone, could the pet get depressed? Yes, they can. They can become mokey. I mean, it's sad, but you know, the best thing you can do is show them a lot of attention, a lot of love. And maybe what I tell people to do is this. Start, other people in the house should start doing things for the pet that they love. For example, walking, feeding. Let that pet start bonding with someone other than just one person or two people, whoever it is. So that would be interesting. Okay, let me go right here to interesting cat in concierge medicine. So basically, concierge, at least as I know it, in veterinary medicine, is not like human medicine in the sense that when you go to a concierge doc, they're not taking insurance. Well, we don't have insurance really anyway in veterinary medicine. Not most people don't have it. Everything is a cash business, which is very similar. The difference is they are available 24/7. And what I have found, and my friend Marty Becker, it's so crazy we're talking about this because we just had a long conversation about this. What is the difference between what we did and how we worked and how we defined success and what's happening now? Well, I'll tell you, with 40%+ of veterinary hospitals in the country being owned by corporate, and corporate companies are usually backed by private equity or venture capital. What do they care about? Do they give a damn about how healthy the pet is or how you're treating it? Not a thing. All they care about is the bottom line. They want the money. They have investors. They have to show to the investors that what they did was a good investment, and they need to see profit at the expense of patient care. Meaning, and I have one of my classmates, we had a long discussion about this, Julie, I don't know, Julie sometimes comes on the show, and she said that her hospital that she owned, she sold part of it to a company, a Thrive, and all they cared about was bottom line. So much so that when they were out of epinephrine, you need epinephrine in the hospital. And when she asked the practice manager who came from the business side, well, we can't order again until next month. Well, what do you mean, why not? Because we have a quota for bit. Quota? What do you care about the quota? We need things here to help our pets. And it is so frustrating. So, I mean, look, that's why I got in big fights with VCA when I sold to VCA. Oh, it was miserable. I couldn't practice the way I would, even though I had it in my contract, by the way, and I had to put it in the contract. Doctor is to perform the way he did prior to the acquisition. Did they let me? Nah, not at all. So I told them where they can go. Not so nicely, by the way. And after telling them a few times where to go, very not so nicely, each time it got worse. Then they said, you know what? You're fired. Best thing that ever happened to me, really. Because then I took my clients, and like JB is here online right now. And she's been with me for a long time. And she, and I would say I don't know, close to 90% of my clients came with me. And they all say the same thing. They're not going to see another doctor. But what's happening is, and I find this, for me, success, and I said, Marty Becker and I talked about this the other day. It's not about the money. We take an oath, a veterinarian's oath, and it says nothing about how much money we have to take home. What it does say is we have to provide care and relieve animal suffering and do what's right for community. Well, they don't max. When you have a business that's all about business, it doesn't fit. And this is the fights that we always have. So anyway, my success and Marty's success was built on relationships. And I'll tell you why. A lot of these, for example, my clients come in, they want to see me, which is great because I want to see them. And I love their pets and I have a great time. That's why I end up schmoozing with my clients way too much because we know each other for 30 plus years, sometimes 35 years. I'm seeing grandchildren now of my original clients when I started practicing 40 plus years ago. So, I mean, it's amazing. So, you know, what it is, it's about relationships. And that's why these corporations don't want you to develop a relationship with a vet. So that's why you sometimes go in, you see a different vet every time. They want you to bond, not to the doctor, but to the practice. So when that doctor leaves, and trust me, they will, then they're going to get frustrated just like I did. Very few corporate doctors stay in the corporation for a really long time. They want to get out and do their own thing, or they get frustrated, as did I. So they want you to not bond to the doctors. Because look what happened. When I left, I fired and all my clients came with me. So that's the magic. That's kind of concierge. What you're doing when you're available, when you care. And as I said, I have a big slide when I lecture. I'm sure I've shared it with you before. Clients don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that is what it boils down to. When you develop that relationship, that's success. Because these clients are going to be with you. They're going to trust you. And what I find as a doctor is that I'm not always looking for the most expensive alternative. If I can do something less expensively, or if I have a really strong hunch of what it is, sometimes I'll say, you know what, why don't we treat this first? I really think this is what's going on. If it works, great. If not, this is the next test or the next test we have to do. And that's, I say to veterinarians, that's a win-win. Because then what happens is, if it works, oh my God, I'm a hero. And if it doesn't work, the clients already know. I already pre-sold, I hate that word, but pre-sold what's going to come up next, what we'd have to do. So there's a lot more sort of trust. And when you trust somebody, you have a relationship, you know you're not getting screwed. Whereas the corporate practices, trust me, I will tell you right now, you're getting screwed. I don't care whether it's Banfield, whether it's VCA, whether it's Thrive, whether it's Access or Merivet. I can tell you right now, whoever it is, if you're in a corporate practice, you are getting screwed. It's a terrible thing to say. Damn it, it's true. And I will prove it a zillion times from cases that I see from, as I said, elsewhere, animal hospital, as we call it. It's just so frustrating to me. So we have, of course, I went overboard as I usually do. Let me say, when you far from the start and always will be worms, we love you. Thank you, Janice. I love you too. And it's, you know what? This is why I love what I do because these relationships are, I have for so long. I remember the, this is cute. When I was working for my first and only boss, back in the day, Culver City Animal Hospital, 1984. And the doctor I was working for, I'm not going to mention the name, he would always, you know, we were just different. Let's put it this way. He wore Gucci loafers, gabardine slacks. I never saw him get down on the floor. I never let a dog lick him in the face. But I'm the opposite. I was all over the floor. So anyway, you know, I've never seen him like pick up a dog, walk in our room, hugging it. It was unbelievable. So anyway, when I finally left, and again, not on good terms, and I opened up a practice a quarter mile away. And that was my first practice. And all of a sudden, one day, a kid comes in. And I know that the relationship his father had with my old boss was like this. So I said, when he came in, I said, oh, no, we didn't move. He goes, I just moved. I left, Larry. So, they're still over there. He goes, I know. That's why I'm here. I would never want to see that guy. So this is how you build it. That was new. How much could I know? Really, when you're brand new, you can't. It takes a while and you're going to learn so much. I say you will learn more in your first year of practice than you did in 4 years of veterinary school. And that's the truth. Percentage really great of cancer if we choose not to neuter or 18-month Great Dane, a Great Pyrenees. Okay. So the answer is no one can guarantee anything. There were done many, many studies and what they found, and especially with large breeds, why I'm become more of a stickler with large breeds. And that is that there was a 65% greater incidence in long bone cancer, osteosarcoma. This study was done on Rottweilers and in dogs that were pre-pubertally neutered and 35% greater in dogs, females that were pre-pubertally spayed. So they don't know why, but there must be something that those sex hormones do that help protect the bone from getting cancer 10 years down the road, 8 years down the road, whatever it is. Now, so my new thing is large breed dogs would be a year to a year and a half, and giant breeds would be a year and a half to 2 years. So that Great Pyrenees, I would take, because the giant breeds are slowly to develop, all right? But physically and as far as sexual hormones, the only breed, and this is very fascinating, the only breed that they studied that did not, they looked at all sorts of parameters, and the only breed they studied that did not meet these parameters was the Golden Retriever, which is why with Goldens, I just did a hysterectomy, not an ovariohysterectomy. We left the ovaries. I just took the uterus. Dog can never get pregnant, but this is the new thing, basically, for Golden Retrievers. I met a woman at a trade show, a veterinarian, who is very active in Golden Retriever rescue. She has two Goldens. We talked about this, and she said, if I knew then what I know now, I would never have spayed or neutered my Goldens. There's a lot of work coming out of Davis, but there are other things out there that say, maybe not. So I will educate the client about all of this, and there are obviously pros to neutering. I can also tell you that 75% of dogs found dead on U.S. roads and highways are non-neutered males. That's way over the percentage of neutered males. So that means that it's crazy that these intact males have that urge to run, way more so than a female, either male, spayed or not spayed, and a neutered male. That's why the prevalence of dead dogs on highways are usually intact males. So now, yeah, they can die of cancer, but they could die by getting hit by a car. Well, pick your choice, but there's not enough I know. What I do is I relate it all and let the client make the decision. But with big dogs like your Great Pyrenees, I would obviously, definitely advocate neutering, but yes, 18 months to 2 years, I would wait, absolutely. Okay, let's take a quick break now, only because I've talked like I normally do way more than I need to. And then we will come back and we'll finish up our show. Mark, take it away.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back live on Pet Life Radio. I took my business, and thanks to clients like this, they all came. I knew that they would hurt. They would feel it. But they did the best they could, and it's okay. It worked out good forever. They're happy. I own the real estate. My wife and I own that real estate. So what that means is we get paid every month the rent. And they usually don't buy the buildings. They just buy the business. So, and then they put $1 zillion into it because there was another practice down the street that they bought and merged it into my building. So, and with all the improvements they made to really handle the increase, I don't think they're going anywhere. So I'll have a nice tenant for a long time. Okay. Prolonged ringworm has been a huge issue in my rescue, despite any tips. The only thing I can say, we know that ringworm, we see it in cats a lot. And I would do, you see, you're using, when you say antifungal, are you using topical or also like ketoconazole or fluconazole or itraconazole orally? You need to do both. You need to treat cats for at least a month if you're going to do the orals. Bathe them frequently, even with something we used to use for sarcoptic mange called lime sulfur. It smells terribly, but it also has great activity. Oh, and also regular shampoos with an antifungal medication. The key is you need to keep them apart. I don't know how they're kept. They literally have to be separated. It's highly contagious, from especially cat to cat. So if you separated them, treated them religiously, oral antifungals, topical antifungals, that you should be able to beat this. And I do topical too. And also one trick. You know, normally when you have a lesion on a skin, and the ringworm lesions are usually round, thus ringworm, They're a bit raised, sometimes reddish and a little flaky and very, very itchy. So normally what we do is, let's say there's a lesion right there. And you say, you know, go put some Neosporin on it. So what do? We go there and start and work around. With ringworm, we got to do the opposite. Because when you touch it here and then start going around, you're spreading it. So the thing to do is start on the outside wider than where it is and then start working in into the center. That might help also. And if it's orally and topically, you just got to keep going. But the key, you got to keep them separate. And if they all have ringworm, yeah, because what happens is they're going to respond differently at different paces. So you can have one that's taking longer and it's going to continue to reinfect the others. In order to stop them, you got to separate them. And one place, just so you know, as a cat mom or cat snippers, that you can not get ringworm in a non-haired area. I mean, I shouldn't say hair follicle area. And there's only one place, really, on the upper body that doesn't have hair follicles, and that's the palms of our hands. So you can touch it with your fingers, but don't let it get in the back or your arms, because they have hair follicles. So anyway, can I explain the difference and implication of a mass that feels like it can be moved around versus a mass that doesn't move? You know, okay, so great question. And this is interestingly why I use my HCV. I have a device that it cannot tell me whether or not it's truly cancer, but it can tell me that it's not behaving like normal tissue. And it's fantastic. It takes 15 minutes. So when we take a cytology, a needle aspirin, they come back inconclusive, non-diagnostic. So you just spent a couple of $100 getting it. You spend another couple of $100 as a lab fee. And then it comes back saying, inconclusive. And what? Just wait to $350, $400. So with the Vista, the HCV stuff, this device, I can tell you if it comes back behaving like normal tissue, then first of all, you can breathe easy. And secondly, now we have something that doesn't become urgent, but we can actually remove it next time we do a dentistry, next time we have another reason to anesthetize, or we can still remove it. Now, fatty tumors, first of all, are usually roundish. Now, those are the capsulated ones. Some are encapsulated, non-capsulated, and they kind of feel mushy all over. But tumors don't feel like that, so it's probably a fatty tumor. Those, you might have a better luck using cytology because it'll be easier. It's all over the place. You might get a good sample. Especially with lipomas, there's so much fat in the skin, you can stick a needle into something that's even cancer, but you hit fat along the way and you send the slide and it comes back fatty. You think, oh, great. It's only a fatty tumor. No, it still may be cancer. So my criteria is I will do the HCV Vista. That'll let me know, am I urgent or is it not urgent? Can it wait or should it not wait? If it's round and soft and mushy and movable and I could kind of lift it away, most likely lipoma. But if it's fixed and firm, it's coming off. And now the question is, do you aspirate first? This is where I differ because of practicality. Remember, I'm not an academic by no means. I'm a practical doc. The concern is that if you have something that's a mast cell, and you stay really close to the mass. And then it comes back saying mast cell, but the margins are very narrow. So if I'm taking a mass off that I suspect it could be a mast cell and it's an area where I have a lot of loose skin, I'm going to take that wider margin anyway. It doesn't hurt. You know, we always joke about what takes longer to heal, a 2-inch incision or 4-inch incision? And the answer, same time, because they heal side to side. So whether it's this big or this big, it's going to still heal at the same pace. 14 days, take the stitches out, you're cool. So why not, if you can, be more aggressive when you're removing it because it's no extra fee, the cutting is cutting, you put a little more sutures, and even if it comes back with a condition, a mast cell, you've already got your margins. So, and that's kind of what I love to see. Now, as far as if there's any concern, if it's fixed and it's firm, I really want to get it off. So, and I tell clients that, you know, I'd rather remove it now. Oh, another criteria. Is it growing? If it's growing with some rapidity, then you want to get rid of it. Because a lipoma is, I've had lipomas that will grow, but it takes a while. I mean, literally 6 months. You know, first it was a walnut size. Maybe now like it's a small egg size. Then it's, yes, I would know. But by that point, I'm sure I probably would have done a dental. In which case, I always tell clients when we have a better reason to anesthetize, let's just take it out anyway. That way, you don't have to worry about it. I don't want you to worry about it. But I also don't want to waste an anesthesia for something that was super benign. So that's kind of how I work. There are differences of opinion. I know one of my very dear friends, colleagues, Adam, is on right now. And Adam, chime in if you want. But I think that I'm trying to do sometimes like kind of less is more from a financial standpoint. If I can, you know, knock it out all in one sitting, I'd rather do that. Or sometimes it's the opposite. If it turns out to be something I don't want to wait because the HD Vista said, no, it is not behaving like normal tissue, or I just have a fear that it is something solid and firm and not movable. It seems like it's deeply attached. Then I guarantee, unless you had a dentistry done 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, there's some tartar on those teeth anyway. So what I'll do is I call it a mini hand scale. And just to, since they're down, let's just get everything perfect. So I hope that answers your question. You can always reach out to me if you have any more questions about this. Oh, next week, I'm going to the Western Veterinary Conference in Vegas. I'm leaving Sunday. I forgot when my flight is. So I will post during the week and I will tell you, Mark, for the Pet Life Radio, whether or not we're going to have a show. I think my flight's late enough that I can do 9 to 9:30 and still make the airport and have no problem. I think it's an 11:30 flight. So, but I will let you know. Of course, you know me, I'd love to do the show because I love to help you guys out. But I do want to talk about something that I deal with a lot, and that is emergencies. Because I would tell you right now that the vast majority of emergencies, really, I'm talking 95, 98% are not emergencies. And I want to just give you some guidelines. When to worry, when not to worry, and even if you're kind of worried, what you can do about it. And now with telemedicine, there are so many opportunities to have something seen by a veterinarian who can then at least guide you. And oftentimes what I find, no, I'm not saying ignore this. It's an issue, but it can wait till tomorrow or it can wait till Monday. And things like limping dogs, even vomiting. There's so many reasons an animal vomits. So I want to see the pet. If I see a pet running around like nothing's happening and he vomited once or twice, I'm not worried. Certainly not. You have to get him in an emergency. And limping. Everyone says limping. He jumped off, he's limping. You turn your ankle all the time, you limp. You don't run to see a doctor and get x-rays. Even lacerations or bites, that's a good one. Bite wounds. Bite. The last thing that we do in a bite wound is fix the skin. So these are little things we'll talk about next week. So get your questions ready. Things that you've gone to emergency for, spent a fortune, and tell me what the final problem was, because I have a lot of stories. All right. Anyway, see you next week. Thanks for joining me here at Pet Life Radio. Hope I was helpful for you. And again, you guys are the best. So keep your questions coming and have a great week. See you on Sunday.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.